just a subtle little glimmer, some suggestion that you'd have me if I could only make me better, then I would stand a little stronger as I walk a little taller all the time. Because I know you are a cynic, but I think I can convince you, yeah, cause broken people can get better if they really want to, or at least that's what I have to tell myself if I am hoping to.
Hello, Vancouver, coming to you live from Vancouver's downtown east side. This is Talk Recovery Radio on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. In studio with my co-host Darren Gaylor.
Just the two of us.
Just the two of us now. For those
you
of you,
and I.
You and I. Francis Stone's last show was last week. Last Thursday, we did a farewell show. Francis was with us for almost 6 years. And she's moving on to different things. She wants to grow her business and all that. And we wish the best for Francis.
And here we are, just sitting in the same old studio.
I know. Here we are, just, you know, saving lives.
Going nowhere.
No, it's not true.
We're having a good time.
I'm going somewhere. I had a meeting with City Hall today for Recovery Day 2019. For those of you that don't know, I'm the president of the board for Recovery Day. And, yeah, we're asking them for a ton of money because Recovery Day is just ballooned. Like, it's going to be 200 grand next year to put on Recovery Day. And we're going bigger again. And, yeah, so we're like, you need to help us because the insurance has skyrocketed. When we started this, insurance was $300. Guess how much the insurance is for Recovery Day now? $7,000 just for insurance.
Wow.
I know. So and if there's any sponsors listening, we need sponsors too. So that's what we did this morning, and now I'm here at the studio. And, you know, came in on a car ride. We've got our personal story here. Ashley, who's going to be joining us in a bit. Ashley's going to tell us about her story overcoming addiction. And, you know, there's people using out front, and I just saw a friend of mine. You know, Ashley's like, who was that? And it's like, he was on the very first Pride float that we did for recovery 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he's just out there with his heroin stuff.
Well,
that he's
doing. That's the reality. Every week, I've said it before, I bump into somebody. And the reason I know them is mostly because they were clean at one point and in recovery. And, the reality is it's not just always a pleasant story of success. Yeah. And I mean, let's face it, like, I was sitting there thinking of my life lately and just the things that are stressful now, and how much gratitude and how much, like, I don't know, sometimes I feel like after I get through it, like, this was actually a pleasant experience. Like, this level of stress is fine, but I worked my ass off in recovery. Like, it didn't come easy.
No, it doesn't.
I don't think anybody just is going to get a happy, living a new life without putting some serious time and effort in.
Yeah. It was awkward. It's like, hey, how's it going? Nice to see you. He's obviously high. And then there's that awkward moment where you're just like looking at each other and I'm like, I have an appointment. You know, I have to go. And it's just like, see you later. And we got a couple minutes left. Hot topics. We usually start the show off. I got called by the Vancouver Sun a couple of days ago about an opinion for an opinion article that Daphne Brown was writing in regards to interventions. And they're doing a story about our family's getting scammed and interventions and how much money they cost and what kind of policies are in place. So, I mean, I know people that have had interventions and, they'd be dead if it wasn't for the interventions. Mm-hmm. And I know people that have had interventions and it's like they didn't go anywhere. And it's really, you don't know. And ultimately, when are we going to, understand that the individual has to take accountability for their life. I know that you're involved with some interventions, Darren, and it was quite interesting. The article just basically says should the government control interventionists?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think any type of profession requires a certain certification or, you know, a level of ethical and moral guidelines to follow when you're dealing in these situations. Absolutely. I mean, there's going to be like, hey, I got a friend who's clean, and that's all they are. Maybe they're a construction worker, yeah. But they're living life clean, and they've gotten through their addiction. Like, hey, come and talk to them. Like, that's not a professional intervention. Like,
but we can't lose sight of one addict helping another, and the 12 step and the I am responsible. I mean, yeah, it gets really gray area.
Well, no, anybody who's going to charge money
when you're writing checks for $3,000, there needs to be something. Yeah, certified, and some kind of policy. If I don't do any work, I'll pay you back and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, it's in the Vancouver Sun. You can check it out. She did a two-part series on accreditation, licensing, and everything. And there's a lot of great interventionists out there. Mm-hmm. You can go to our Talk Recovery Radio is brought to you by Last Door Recovery Society. And you can go to our website. We've got interventionists that we recommend. But there's a big disclaimer on there. And if you're listening to the show and you have a loved one out there that's using, if your interventionist works with a treatment center or recommends only one treatment center or kind of gives you that, hey, I can get them in this treatment center on a good deal, run, because that is completely unethical. Interventionists should not be attached to any treatment centers. So, Talk Recovery Radio comes to you live every Thursday. You can catch us on iTunes, SoundCloud, YouTube, Facebook, go to talkrecoveryradio.com, and you can hear all of our past shows. We've been on air for almost 6 years. Thanks, everybody, for listening and watching with our Facebook Live, so we really appreciate that. Every week, we try to bring a unbiased viewpoint to the many, 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 many gazillion Googles pathways to recovery, and there are tons of them. And we appreciate that there's tons of them because there's so many unique people. And we bring you different experts on air. Darren, who are we talking recovery to with today?
We are going to talk recovery with Linda Landon. How are you today?
I'm great. Can you hear me okay?
That's perfect. I hear you loud and clear. Now, Linda, you come with quite a resume here. You're a certified business coach, trained recovery coach, human design specialist, deep coach facilitator, somatic practitioner, certified orgasmic meditation trainer, and
that's on there too.
Yeah. Yeah, and an author, and wow. First of all, I just want to ask you, human design specialist. I've never heard that term before.
Human design is a personality assessment tool that I use with all of my clients, and I also have gone into business teams, treatment centers, and worked with staff. And what human design does is it gives you a blueprint, like a set of operating instructions, like the best way for you to make decisions and move through your world. And it's a great template for clients because it gives them a lot of compassion and understanding of why they are the way they are.
Okay.
And it takes away all the negativity. And it's really quite insightful. Like, people say, oh, my God, nobody's ever seen me so clearly. And I'm just using this tool.
And so this tool that you're using with people that are, well, in a general way, I guess, you know, speaking, if you're working in treatment centers, mm-hmm. that haven't been living with much purpose, they haven't been connected to their values and moralities, yeah. and whatnot. Like, how does the assessment get through, you know, sort of who, like, because who they've been perhaps over the last few years or months, mm-hmm. Isn't an amazing person. They're doing
exactly,
you know, what we do in addiction, going to any means or lengths. So how do you get through that identity?
Well, it's so interesting that you say this because in my world, I have a private practice, and twice a week I actually work in a treatment center in Los Angeles, an outpatient program. So I just want to say that because I get to see addiction in all its different phases, people who are just newly entering into a program of recovery, and I also work with people who've been in recovery for many, many years. So when I use this for people, what it helps them see is who they are. Like, when you talk in terms of, like, mindfulness or DBT, it's like their wise mind, who they authentically, truly are underneath all the addictive patterns, behaviors, and conditioning that has taken them down.
Mm.
So they get a clear mirror of who they truly are. And they also get to see, like, you know, in 12-step, we talk about character defects. And I help them see how these, quote, defects may be sort of, they may be wired for these energetically.
Mm-hmm.
And not that they can't improve on them, but it helps them relax and not be so judgmental and self-blaming.
Right. So there's the ability of seeing different potential. And what...
Absolutely. They really get to see their potential. Plus, with this particular modality, I give them something called their strategy, which when they start to use it, and it's usually quite simple, they start to live in their potential. They start to make better decisions that are more in alignment with who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just showing them their potential, it's showing them how to access that. And then, of course, that's not the only thing I do, because I really do deep work with people, like you were talking earlier. Like, you've got to be willing, you know, in recovery to do the deep work, or you're going to go out.
Absolutely.
So I do the deep coaching work with them, and that's one of the tools we use, so they can learn to tolerate difficult emotions and experiences and you know, even trauma, so that they can move through that into the truth of who they are.
Now, do you believe that, like, that's that question I think gets discussed a lot in treatment, you know, like, oh, I'm a lost soul, I don't know who I am, and we sort of put that spiritual spin, like, you know, recovery can be finding, you know, who you are, who you truly are. Is this something that's been there from birth? Is this something, an identity that you were when you were, like, you know, 6 through 12? Like, what is this concept of who am I really?
You know, I love that you asked that question, because I want to go to the word lost.
Okay.
So, So some people move through the world in certain situations feeling a little lost.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they use, you know, a substance or they use some kind of addictive substance or whatever to sort of self-medicate and deal with that feeling of lostness.
Right.
But in human design, and also in other, you can find this in other assessment tools that really map out who you are. Some people are wired to feel a little lost in certain situations.
Sure.
Like, it's like in human design, you have something called an identity center. And if your identity center is what we call wide open, when you're around groups of people, especially people who aren't good for you or your people, you can feel like you dissolve into the mix and you don't know who you are.
Out of your element, I like to call it.
Out of your element. And it's like you were born that way. And then when I tell people that, they go, oh my God, like, they feel seen. And then what I do is show them how to create environments where they really feel found, where they find themselves and they ground into themselves.
Mm.
So that experience of lostness can be something that they're just wired for, and it can be worked with and addressed and healed in a way.
And it sounds like a lot of who you really are isn't set in stone. It becomes, you know, who do you want to be? Who do you, you know, what kind of values do you admire? What, you know, that's a deep, deep question that I think definitely a lot of people that have been lost in addiction struggle with. Like, I've always sort of looked at that question as, you know, after, you know, being that toddler and, you know, sort of getting through that first stage of development where you're just dependent on, you know, parents, there's a time of when I remember what I guess I'll call, like, innocent, you know, like, mm-hmm. who I was to my friends, how I made friends, the types of friends I had. I mean, there was a many, many years where there was no discrimination on who I hung out with. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was an innocent sort of way of living. And whatever it was that happened, you know, is that could possibly be what you know, where I got lost from that, mm-hmm. from that, where it, there was no influence on why I was, you know, friends with this guy and, you know, why I liked hanging out with this girl. It just sort of was natural. So that's pretty amazing, because you get so far from that in addiction, don't we? Like, mm-hmm. you sort of forget about the things that you're capable of being.
Can I say something here? Because you're just naming it so beautifully.
Okay. Thank you for the compliment.
Yeah, like in that period of time when we're innocent,
mm-hmm.
I like to say that's the time of our lives when we're being ourselves. We're authentically ourselves.
Yeah.
And then life happens. Trauma happens. Parenting, bad parenting happens. Bullying happens.
Yep.
Things happen. Abuse happens. And we start to shut down around that authenticity, that beautiful innocence. And we start to put on top of ourselves like patterns and ways of behaving that aren't natural to us. And then we reach to addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're talking... So, and then we, going back to the word lost, we lose ourselves, we lose that innocent, pure, authentic self, who we truly are at our core.
Right.
So the work we're talking about when you move into recovery is recovering the authentic, innocent, true self.
Do you find it more difficult with addicts with certain types of substance addictions? You know what I mean? Is a heroin addict more difficult to get through to than, you know, an alcoholic? Like, is there any sort of differentiation in there?
You know, not really. It's like if that person has hit the place where they know they have to make a change, they're dying and they really want the lifeline of recovery.
Right.
It doesn't really matter. I mean,
it's
I also work with a lot of clients with mental illness, you know, bipolar, borderline, and maybe they don't even have a substance abuse problem, but they still, you know, have addictive behavior.
Right.
I haven't found like one population is more difficult. If anything, I love working with people in recovery because they really want help.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe I'm asking a personal question because I have a little bit of a pessimistic sort of view sometimes, and I don't know if it's based on my mood or if it's just what I truly believe. I'll figure that out one day. But there's,
you can look at your chart.
No doubt. There's part of me that sort of like, especially when I come into where we live, the downtown east side, where sort of using is everywhere and people are street entrenched and there's poverty and all the things that go along with it. And it's not just here that I believe, but it's just a belief that not everyone is capable of getting that and mm-hmm. is capable of what we're talking about here, whether it's, is it just their, like, I think everybody's capable of willingness, but I mean, I just sometimes think that like some people aren't going to try to find a deeper sense of themselves. Okay. Like, I don't know, let's just say for argument's sake, like the evil people are just evil. Like they're just bad. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, this is such a great conversation. I had a teacher. Have you heard of Miguel Ruiz, who wrote The Four Agreements?
Absolutely.
So he's a friend of mine, and he's a teacher that I studied with for years. And see if I hope I don't like totally misrepresent what he said, but he said, you know, we're all love. And so many of these evil, bad behaviors we fall into are just a distortion of love.
Wow.
So in my world, this is just my perspective, when I meet someone, whether they're using or not, I see the essence of who they are.
Hmm.
And it's goodness, and there's love there. Even certain people in our politics right now, I can see there's an essential core there that's good.
Right.
And then life happens and culture happens and environment happens. And some people never find their way to the doorway that's going to take them back to recovery.
Right.
But I think the potential is there for everyone. But there's so many circumstances that get in the way. Like, you know, you were talking earlier, just between the two of you, about someone you ran into on the street who didn't make it, you know, who's out again.
Mm-hmm.
And
It's tough because I do believe that addicts, and I always sometimes speak in generalities, but addicts, they're vulnerable, hurt, lost people, and that found drugs at one point, or substance or something at one point, that they just truly, innocently thought and felt was a solution that wasn't going to be the rest of their life, I want to become an addict situation. And, like, it's just so difficult because I've worked with a lot of people myself who've gotten clean, and they're just awful people, and it's sometimes it's hard to, like, do we go deeper, is there deeper, you know, ways to go here, and I guess I don't know, I think maybe I just sort of need to protect myself sometimes, and you know, like, around us people, even the most best intentioned people that aren't well, like, could take advantage, and they could, you know, you know, step on your vulnerability, or, you know, do those things that we've all, I mean, I've done for sure, but I feel like horrible about it. And I continue to live with guilt in my life for a lot of the regrets that I've done. And I don't excuse it because, oh, I was loaded at the time, you know, like, that's something I did as a human being. Yeah. Under the influence, but I'm still a human being now trying to deal with it.
And you're responsible.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. And I guess anybody's capable of being responsible.
Yeah. Yes. And some people never connect with that or access that. And I'm not making excuses for them. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's so funny as we're talking, I'm thinking of all these slogans from, like, 12 step, and it's like, I don't know why they're coming, but, like, there, but for the grace of, what's that one?
For the grace of God go I?
Yes. You know, some people are fortunate enough to get help.
Yes.
Some people get help and they can't receive the help. They can't turn the corner. They can't. It's just, and it's heartbreaking. I mean, the relapse rate is huge. And I see a lot of people come into this treatment program where I work who don't make it.
Yeah. Well, I have, speaking of slogans, Dum Vita Est Spes Est, tattooed on my leg. It means where there's life, you know, there's a chance. There's always possibility. Where there's life, there's hope. Like, it's, you know, and that we can't lose sight of. So Ignite Your Joy. This is a website. This is a
okay. So this is great. We could talk for hours, but
no doubt.
I've been a recovery coach for, you know, 20 years about, and I have a new website called igniteyourjoy.us. The focus of my work now is really helping people ignite their essence, their joy, and really live a joyful life in recovery. So it's everything I've done, plus the focus on not just getting by, but really thriving and uncovering that spark deep within you that's been covered over by addiction, by conditioning, by whatever, and bringing that forward, finding a way to sustainably bring it forward and guide you so you can return to more of that innocent, exuberant, authentic self that you are, or, you know, that you were as a child, if you were lucky. Some of us didn't even get to express that much as a child.
Right.
So I work with people who are in recovery. I work a lot with the professionals who treat people in recovery because...
Yeah.
As you know, they are the prime, they're so prone to burnout.
No doubt.
Because, like you were saying, you know, you so want to help. And you really have to take care of yourself. Because if you're not taking care of yourself, like taking that oxygen mask first, you can't help anybody else.
That's,
So I also
great
help
analogy.
The helpers. Yeah, yeah, well.
And this you know, like, it's not like you take this course, you get the answer, you find out exactly who you are and live your life. I mean, this is ongoing work. I mean, that
ongoing,
you know, that sort of changes every day, doesn't it? Like, the little bit of who we are. you know.
And we change every day.
Right.
It's not a quick fix, and you know that. Recovery is not a quick fix. Doing the deep work is not quick. But if you're, for those of us who are willing to do it, the rewards are phenomenal.
That's all I was saying at the front of the show. I mean, if there was a quick way to do it, we wouldn't appreciate it. We wouldn't honor ourselves. There would be no resiliency in our lives. It would just sort of come, and we would take it for granted. And probably use it for a little while, take it for granted, and then shove it off because, hey, I can just get a quick fix again later. I mean, that's...
Right, and that's what addicts like, is a quick fix.
Yeah. I was looking for that recovery in a pill for a long, long time. And you also are an author of The Power of Pause.
So I've written a couple of books. The Power of Pause, subtitle is Simple Meditations for Complicated Lives. And I put this together because my clients basically told me to. And it's a little booklet that's all these different sort of meditations you can do in the moment, like when you're driving your car or brushing your teeth or waking up in the morning. So instead of like sitting on a zafu and like meditating, which most people don't want to do, it's how to stop in the middle of a day, pause, reconnect to who you are, and from that place, move forward into the rest of your day. Mm. So the book has chapters, and each chapter has an experiential exercise which the reader can do. And it also comes with a CD where you can actually, CDs are getting phased out, but it still comes with a CD that you can actually be guided through these various meditative exercises.
That's great, because that's it has to be like convenient for us, isn't it? You know,
it's very
sort of adapt to our lives.
Yeah.
Well, that's
It's got to be useful and it's got to be in the moment, or it's not going to be.
And practical, because I've always been a proponent. I don't want to become a guru. I'm not Buddhist, but you're damn straight to say that, you know, like I need to stop, take a breath. You know, reset, reflect, and just stop moving. Because sometimes the way I'm moving is in the wrong direction completely. You know, so that's awesome. Linda,
go ahead. Quickly, the other book I've written is a book on human design. So if people are interested who are listening today, they can email me, and I will send them for free a copy of their chart. I would show them how to give me their information. I could run their chart and give them a couple chapters from my book, which begins to explain what it means.
That's amazing. That is amazing that you're doing that. So, like, hopefully all our listeners get in touch with you. I'm definitely interested. So that's, did you say exactly where, like, all of your sort of social media resources and websites?
That stuff I sent to Jordan, and for the sake of right now on the call, I can say my email is Linda, Linda, at Ignite, Ignite, your, your, joy, joy.us.
That's sweet.
You can contact me, and then that's my website as well, but I think Jordan has my Facebook page and all that good stuff too.
Yeah, you'll be able to connect with Linda on talkrecoveryradio.com, on our Facebook page. We've tagged her Facebook page, and you'll be able to replay the show. So definitely you can get links to her Amazon pages for the books as well. What a great interview.
Yeah.
Thank awesome. I want to ignite my joy today. Like, I just, you know, like, it's just a nice little mantra. It's like, how am I going to ignite my joy?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and the human design, like, just in the back of my mind right now, it's like, okay, when was the last time you even thought about that?
Mm.
You know,
there's just something here though that we're almost gonna miss, but you know what? We're just gonna go into a little bit of our song break here. This nine energy centers, like in 30 seconds, I know chakras and so forth. What is this nine energy centers?
That's a great question. So the nine energy centers correspond to the chakras. Each energy center corresponds to a, like, there's one for how you think, there's one for how you process emotions, there's an energy center for how you your life force, work force, and sexual energy. There's a center, there's an energy for your heart, there's an energy center for your sense of direction. So in human design, I explain to people how these different energy centers work for each person, and everybody is different.
Well, lots of interesting information here. You know, we've done 167 shows. I'm not counting, but 167. And this is up there and neat stuff. Like, yeah. Really, really interesting information. Thanks for being on our show. We really appreciate it. Darren's been interviewing Linda Landon from Ignite Your Joy.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go into our first song break and be right back with our personal story with Ashley in the studio on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. This is Catfish and the Bottlemen. Read My Mind.
On the corner of Main Street, trying to keep it in. Say I wanna move on, you say I'm falling deep in my mind. Make shit right. I never really gave up on.
Oh, I sang the wrong verse. Can I carry on? Does anybody mind me just carrying on like that? Live music, what the kids want? Okay, let's go.
It's funny how you just break down, waiting on some sign. I pull up to the front of your driveway with magic soaking my spine. Can you read my mind? Make shit bad. Give me my mind, I'll carry it.
Triple J. And welcome back to Talk Recovery Radio. You're listening to us on 100.5 FM. I need my headphones. I can't hear anything. There we go. And every week we come to you from the Downtown East Side, Vancouver Co-op Radio. And we just finished an awesome interview with Linda Landon. Darren was interviewing her, and she was talking about igniting your joy in recovery. And she also wrote a book, The Power of Pause. You can catch that interview if you missed it on our SoundCloud, YouTube, on iTunes, and also at TalkRecoveryRadio.com. And we are now in studio with Ashley. Hi, Ashley.
Hi.
Hi. Let's check your mic levels. Perfect. So Ashley is part of our weekly personal stories where we ask people from the community to have the courage to speak their story, and hopefully somebody hears it, and who knows who's listening out there right now, and hopefully we can inspire them with some recovery talk.
Let's do it.
Okay, so Ashley, I got to drive with you into Vancouver. We survived.
Yeah.
Thanks for understanding my driving ethics. And, you know, we talked really briefly. I've known you for a while now, and, you know, you are in recovery now.
I am indeed.
Indeed. You're part of the New West recovery community. And what's, without getting too far deep into your past, what ended up getting you to a place where you needed to ask for help?
Yeah. So first of all, thanks for having me. I love this show. I love the personal stories because I can always relate. I've been in recovery before, so I knew recovery was possible and it was an option. But I had gotten to a space in my life where I had relapsed, and I'd had a pretty major surgery. It was life-threatening, and I was out for about a year, and like my life had. When people say that recovery or addiction is progressive, it's super true. Like, I couldn't get 30 days again. I couldn't get a week again. I was always trying, and I couldn't. And I was living in Kelowna. I'd been a part of the recovery community out there, and I knew that, like, there were clean people, and I just didn't know how to do it on my own.
Did you hate those clean people?
I totally hated those clean people. I would go to detox
those
often.
People.
Yeah. I mean, it's bizarre because I
hated those clean people too. Yeah.
You do. Because you're so jealous, you know, and like you just want what they have and you don't know how they're doing it. Like, mm-hmm. I would go to detox and I'd see people, you know, having like 5 days clean, and I'd be like, how do you do it? How do you get 24 hours? I couldn't do that on my own. Like, it got to that spot for me, right?
Unfortunately, still, when you think of the word addict, they don't even want us to use that word anymore, but I'm going to say it on air all the time, addict. So addict. Most people, when they think of the word addict, they think of people in the Downtown East Side, and you know, they don't think of beautiful women and so forth. And, you know, how do you relate? How did you come to terms with being like, hey, I need help, I'm an addict? You know, did you feel like you weren't part of that?
You know, it's funny because, like, I think for me, like, I always knew that there was something different about me. Like, my behaviors were extra. Like, I took things to an extreme and I remember the first time that I got scared and I told my sister that I thought I might be an alcoholic, but the type of life that I was living, you know, I was living with like drug dealers and I was working in bars, and I just couldn't see how I could live my life but also be clean. Like, it wasn't conducive to that. And I showed up in AA. Can I say that? AA?
Yeah, sure. AA.
AA. Addict. All by myself. And, you know, some people try to carry the message to me, but, like, I didn't know that I would have to change things about myself. Like, I wasn't able to be honest. I couldn't say, like, hey, like, I'm also going home to, like, a big drug dealer and I work doing this job where I make $1,000 a night doing things I shouldn't do and my family doesn't know. And, you know, just like there's no way that recovery would have been congruent with that, right?
So, you know, there's a big push out there for drug users that are using illicit drugs to use... a very common conversation is let's just give people who use drugs legal drugs.
Drugs.
So they don't have to, you know, play the game to get the drugs.
Right.
And then they end up saying, you know, and then these addicts will get jobs and they'll become productive members of society. And all we got to do is we got to give them legal drugs. Right. And everything will be fine. But so say like I would have went to you like when you were still using and said, okay, here's all your dope. Here's all your vices.
Yeah.
Now have a happy life. Like, would you have worked for $10 an hour?
No way in hell.
Yeah, exactly, right?
I mean, like, I
like,
think
you were addicted to more than just drugs.
I was 100% addicted to more than just drugs. And, like, there was no getting to me because of that, because I was able to, you know, I was able to do anything I wanted to do. I was able to, you know, come and go as I pleased. If somebody challenged me, I would just... you know, I would leave them. I had a sense of community because my community was the other people that were doing the same stuff I was doing.
How much harder was it if you were to scale me stopping drinking or me stopping hanging out with those people and working in that industry?
Right.
What was harder? What was harder giving up?
100%. It was harder to say to myself, shut it down. Shut down the life. You know, because I didn't know how to do that. Like, I didn't know who to ask about that. Like, there's a lot of groups to go.
It's a very common theme. It's a very common theme. Even in the gay community, it's like there's the bathhouse lifestyle. There's the online dating. Well, it's not even dating. It's online hooking up.
Yeah.
You know, it's that lifestyle. You know, it's just like, yeah, I might not be doing drugs right now, but I'm doing everything else, right?
And what's hard is, you know, like... almost, you can go to NA and you can talk about drug use and you can talk to that, like, it's kind of an open conversation right now. Like, you can go to a treatment center and they're going to talk to you about your drug use. But where the shame is the things that you do along the way. That's what keeps a lot of us out, is, like, to say, hey, like, yeah, like, I was also a dancer. Or I was also, I worked in a massage place or, you know, whatever people do to create a lifestyle for themselves, right? And like, there's a lot of shame around that. And like, I intellectually, I know that that's what a lot of, like, probably more than 50% of my friends did, but it's not a conversation that we have. And it's something that, like, I feel definitely like people are scared to talk about because there's not a lot of solution.
It's so interesting. What a conundrum we create ourselves where we think if we don't tell anybody and we don't talk about it, nobody will know and everything will be okay. But life doesn't seem to get better. But then when you're like completely honest about your life and just say, hey, man, this is it.
You
know, this is the inside of the covers. Like, life just gets so freer. And I mean, my life is completely open book and I feel like... I don't even understand that idea I had that I had to keep, you know, things private and so forth. I feel really bad for people that have to, like, keep everything. They think they have to keep everything on the hush-hush.
Yeah, and it's delusion, right? Because it's not on the hush-hush, really. But, like, I think that for me, like, recovery is freedom. And, you know, like, whenever I've done walk through the work with someone or someone's walked through the work with me, the whole thing is like, how free do I want to be, you know? And like, I want to be 100% free. I want to wake up in the morning. I don't want to need anything. I don't want to be a slave to anything. And that includes behaviors. Right. That includes money. That includes, you know, like,
it's hard to give up $1,000 a day.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean,
or more.
I remember when I was new in recovery and like, I just, you know, I wasn't making any money. And I mean, I was getting $90 a month. My honest truth, I was on welfare when I was new and $90 a month. And I somehow got a tan out of that. And, but I remember people like making money and that itch, I have to get back to work and make money.
And I hear from guys too, right? Like, they want to jump into like the oil rigs, like, and I'm not judging it. I want everyone to be successful. I have a big push, like a big drive to be successful. I'm a type A. Like, I took business courses. I'm now in the corporate world, right? But like, that happened for me slowly. That was not a quick fix.
Same here.
Versus,
I mean, I go on holidays around the world. I'm going to Italy in a bit and doing 2 weeks. Like, the minute I let go of that itch is when life really, because now I get to keep stuff.
You keep it.
I used to make a ton of money in my using days, but I didn't even have money to put together to take a bus sometimes. So there's a woman out there right now. She's, you know, kind of quasi thinking about going to treatment. She's got a busy life and you know, she's not happy. She's probably in the same place you may have been a while ago. What do you say to them? What do you say to her?
I'm just trying to think of like what would have worked for me. And like, I was kind of looking for someone that was like me. I was looking for somebody that like, cause I thought it was so different. I thought it was like, if people knew what my life looked like and like who I surrounded myself with and where my job was, like they would understand I didn't need treatment. And the thing is like, you're not different. Like you are, you're cool. You're unique. Right. But you're not, there's nothing wrong with you that you can't get clean, you know? And once you do get clean, it's not this huge, like, I take things one day at a time. Like, it's not like I look ahead and I'm just going, oh, I guess I'm doing this for my whole entire life. Like, I did this slowly. I'm still doing this slowly. It doesn't have to be so scary, you know? Like, it's just literally just like, ask for a little bit of help. Find one person you can trust, you know, like make one phone call, you know, it's just tiny, tiny building blocks. And those things eventually, like you will get a bigger life than what you think the streams are, you know, like the purse isn't the goal, right? Like it's cool. Like I have a nice purse. I like my purse, but that's not my goal anymore. Right? Like,
I want a nice purse for Christmas. If anybody's watching that's buying me gifts, yeah, I want a nice purse.
He's a size Louis Vuitton.
Yes, a man purse. What were your first thoughts when I can just imagine the lifestyle. So then all of a sudden you're like in rehab,
right?
You know, and you're like sharing spaces and you know, they're like humility and open-mindedness and willingness and, you know, be nice. Like, what were your first thoughts?
It wasn't something that came natural for me. So I was like, I don't think I can do this, you know? And I was judgmental, but not to where like I thought I was better, but I was just like, who are these people?
Because
it wasn't anybody I knew. Yeah, like
crazy.
Yeah,
she can't help
like,
me.
I just couldn't relate, and it was because I was trying to relate to the story rather than the feeling, right? Like, so I wasn't listening to the fact that these people had, you know, they're exact same as me, had gotten hopeless and sad and didn't want to wake up in the morning anymore, and like that's where I got. But I thought like you had to walk in my shoes exactly in order to understand me and to help me, right? So it wasn't until I really grasped that and like understood that, hey man, like we're all the same. Like that's when that switch changed for me.
So a lot of women sometimes when I go to 12-step meetings and a very common theme when women, I'm not labeling all women the same. Wait, I better back up here. Some women have shared that, you know, I had a really hard time making friends with women and I it's easier for me to make friends with men and, you know, I just don't trust women and all that kind of stuff. So touching on what you just said, so, you know, I'm one of those new girls, you know, I'm 20 days clean and I just said that, you know, what's some of the things that you can offer for them to get through that?
Well, I definitely would have done things differently knowing what I know now, but I would just say, you know, give it a chance. Like, and I know for me, like I had to kind of just make like one friend first, and I had to be open to that, and I did that, and I think what saves me today are the women. Like, so if I could say to any person that was new or any woman, I would just say listen to someone that sounds safe to you and like trust your gut, because that's what I did. I sort of trusted my gut, and like not everyone that is around is going to be safe for you. So if you, you know, you make a connection, try it out. And I mean, like, I guarantee you right now on the comments, it's like my friends are probably like losing their minds, right? Like Jen, she's 18 months today. Like we have real friendships. I have real friendships.
So what
today.
Is that for people that don't know what that means? What's that mean? 18 months?
18 there's some months people clean. Listening. Like she literally, this girl went through with me and, like we did everything together. We didn't know how to live life anymore. So we were just like, we had these conversations like we can't use no matter what. Okay. Okay. I mean, they were super dorky, but, you know, I felt safe with her. I'll use her as an example. And then, you know, somebody else and then somebody else. And it's like, those are the people I lean on for just the everyday problems. 'Cause like recovery from drugs, like I'm lucky that today I don't have the obsession to use. That wasn't always, but that's how I am today. And like, but I do have problems like in life and I need people.
Real life.
Yeah, life real life. Happens. Real life happens. Your boss is a dick or, you know, like you get in a fight with your partner and you need someone to talk to. It's going to be the other people in recovery that are, you know, working their spiritual principles. And for me, it's women.
So Jen's clean time is a big deal.
Oh gosh, yeah, for me, yeah. I love you, Jen.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, who would have thought, you know, other people's, well, that's another part of recovery. You actually care about other people.
Yeah.
And you actually pay attention to other people. Yeah. And you remember other people.
And they pay attention to you. So it's like, I'm other centered. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, it's her 18 months. She messages me yesterday. She's like, it's your 18 months on Sunday. So that's just how it goes. Like we go from being self-centered to other centered. And that's part of the gift, I think.
Now you have a great relationship now.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love him.
Goes to the gym at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, he drives me nuts. Yes. Good for him.
Yeah. I'd kill somebody if they woke me up at 4 o'clock
with
in the morning
shaker.
Making a shake. Yes. It's like all shakes.
I love you, Ryan. I hate your shaker.
You heard it here, Ryan. So that's awesome. And you're, you know, part of the fun and recovery. And how important is fun and recovery for you? Like,
it's so funny. Like, I thought that topic was so dorky. Like, when I first heard, I was like, okay, guys, just stop. Like, I just want to be clean. And then move on, right?
Yeah.
And like I wouldn't stay if this thing wasn't fun. Like I wouldn't stay if there weren't like things I did with people that were just like the most intense fun. And I'm not just saying that to sell it. I'm saying it because it's true. Like
I
have a ball doing like we'll go to panels or something and like the drive along the way is like hilarious. We're cranking music. We're singing. Like Ryan and I go to a ton of like hockey games because we're big sports fans. We see drunk people and it's not like it affects us one way or another, right? Like I go to concerts.
Those people.
Yeah, it's just like they get to do that, right? I have my lifetime supply. I've done that. I've done that.
That's a good way of looking at it. Definitely a lifetime supply.
Yeah.
Yeah. And feeling just grateful that we made it through it.
Yeah, and we have like 5 family Christmases and office parties and we're going to get through it clean. We're going to do it together and that's what we do.
Awesome. Yeah. Any last... So you're available if anybody's watching or
totally.
Listening, you know, Ashley, you know, you can connect with her on Facebook too, and definitely able to support people get through this because, yeah, you need a doctor, yeah, you need a counselor, yeah, you need a therapist, yeah, you need all that, but you know what you really need, and I truly believe, is you need friends and you need
people.
You
need friends and you need someone that's just like gonna go, I feel you, yeah. I feel you, I've been there. Right. Yeah. And like,
well, and that's it.
And then that's it. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
And then
I have a hard time doing that sometimes. I'm like, I get the whole, like, I feel you, but I got to tell you, there's that thing in me is just like, but, you know, if you
I do too.
Follow these instructions, you know.
I know. Control's a defect for sure for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I definitely, I'm trying my best, I swear. Well, thanks for being on our show today.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Everybody in the house, we've got Ashley, Overcoming Addiction, personal story on Talk Recovery Radio. We've got Darren, who's holding the camera this week. And today's the official first show, Saint Francis Stone. So a little bit of French accent there. I don't know where that came from.
Saint
Francis. Saint Francis, yes.
We miss you, Francis.
Thanks for joining us on Talk Recovery Radio. We come to you live every Thursday, noon till 1 on Vancouver Co-op Radio. You can catch us on iTunes, SoundCloud, all our past shows as well. And if you're able to, December 31st, come on down to Metro Vancouver's best New Year's Eve party. It's a fundraiser for Recovery Day. It's at the Anvil Center in New West. There's live bands, there's DJs, there's food, lots of fun. You can go to Recovery Day's Facebook page for more information. And Darren's going to be... Do I have the song ready to go? I don't have the song
probably
ready to go,
not.
Darren. Yeah, I'm sorry. I got so caught up with Ashley. I'm going to take the camera here, Darren.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Hit me up, listeners, viewers. I need some Canadian music. It's tougher to get through, yeah. You know, to find the, because I'm always looking for something unique and special and wicked to crank on our show. So, yeah, send me some ideas and we'll play it. But for now, this is an old school band, right local, the old Grapes of Wrath. This is You May Be Right on Talk Recovery.
Tell you all the same.